tonight's speaker is Adam S. He is a very, very active member of the No Expectations group in East Atlanta. He got sober during COVID when he was getting his start. He was a regular on the Zoom meetings that I was participating with. And I got a chance to work with Adam early in the beginning and watched him grow. I'm really looking for his share tonight. Adam, if you'll come up.
Hey, I'm Adam. I'm an alcoholic. I'm excited and grateful to be able to tell my story here tonight. The fact that I even volunteered to do this is evidence to me that a change has occurred in my life. This is not something I would have ever signed up for before. So if I'm looking for evidence, this is a great example for me. This tradition we have, or this pastime of storytelling, is really important to me. Particularly when people tell their stories, but also make those stories available outside of AA, like Tim does on abluechipspeakers.org. If I don't totally forget to say everything that I want to say, I'll probably talk about how if we didn't do this, it might have taken me a lot longer to come into AA. Every time I get asked to tell my story, it's something I'm excited to do, because if we didn't do this, I might have stayed out of these rooms for a lot longer than I did. So I'm supposed to tell what it was like before I came into AA, what happened to bring me into AA, and then also what it's like now. And so I don't know if anybody's familiar with Cliff Notes, but the Cliff Notes version of my story is kind of like what the book says. I think the phrase that comes to mind for me is pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. That was a great summary for how I felt when I was actively drinking. And flash forward, the program has taken a broken alcoholic boy and turned him into a sober man. And for me, I don't deserve any credit for that. All credit goes to this program in places like NAPA, the NAPA Zoom 545. This program's given me a life I love. So that I will be forever grateful for. So whenever I'm kind of in your shoes and somebody's telling their story, I always, I'm distracted in my own mind by some quick stats. So I always want to know, how old are they and how many years of sobriety that they have. So I will say, if you're anything like me, I'll save you the trouble. I'm 34 years old, and I've got almost 4 years of sobriety. So I guess going back to the beginning, I'm a local boy, born and raised, lived in Atlanta almost all my life besides college. I had alcoholism in my family, but not in my parents. I never saw my parents drinking alcoholically. I've come to know I had an alcoholic grandfather. I had another alcoholic grandfather. It's like all the men on my mom's side have signs of addiction. Some are in AA. But I didn't grow up really seeing alcoholism. It wasn't something that I was privy to. Something that I wasn't really kind of talked about in our family at all. And so in high school, I started to experiment. It wasn't anything crazy. I do remember that early sensation of anytime I took that drink, I just wanted more. To me, that's the most simplest way I've heard it described is you don't just take one drink and you're able to kind of go on with your day. You take that one drink and it's like nothing else matters. That's getting more alcohol was the only thing that mattered to me. I didn't realize that in high school, but that became more apparent for me. And so in high school it was your classic Southeastern American white boy, just going to parties, drinking, going to Braves games, going to concerts, pretty normal. But I think I really kind of got more aware of my alcoholism, when I went to college. I went to college in New Orleans, so as you can imagine, that's a city that I feel like, it increased the momentum or the speed of me eventually coming into these rooms. And so in college I was blacking out a lot, binge drinking, using other forms of alcohol as well. And that's when I kind of first had some of those what I call a sharp bottom moments. It's like those specific events that are the things you look back on and the things that are the scariest. And so I had a seizure related to alcoholism. I had a couple hospitalizations due to drinking. And, you know, I think that's where I first, I obtained evidence that for me allowed me to do step one a little bit more quickly than I would have if I didn't have some of these moments. You know, and talking about step one and powerlessness, I guess the story for me that comes to mind is in college, and it was actually after I graduated college, but I was visiting friends for homecoming for college, and you know, we went out that Friday night, and I got so drunk that I ended up sleeping on a porch, some random porch in New Orleans, probably near, like, I think it was like Chapultepec or Annunciation. It was pretty close to the river where my friends lived, and for any other normal alcoholic, that would have been non-alcoholic, that would have been a wake-up call, like, yeah. You know, holy crap, like, I cannot believe I did that. I mean, you know, that was really, really scary. I did the same thing the next night, different porch. So for me, you know, it's like I look back on that's not normal behavior for a non-alcoholic for me, you know, and so that's funny to look back on now. At the time, it wasn't so funny, but I call that like the two porches story that lives in infamy. The fact that I was just willing to sign up for that same thing the next damn night, different porch, is all the evidence I needed. So then, you know, in my late 20s and early 30s, you know, I really relate to what the book talks about, the progression of the disease. You know, for me, I had kind of like this long, dull bottom, and I kind of got my first experience with really, really an emotional bottom. So I think, you know, it was pretty clear to me when people described that feeling of the allergy. And the physical allergy and the mental obsession, for me, that related to me as well. But what really related was when people talked about the emotional bottom and things like hopelessness, like shame, like guilt, like regret. It was all of these negative emotions to me that I felt like was just part of human existence. And I've learned now that those are the emotions that surround somebody that's in active addiction. And so. I remember one time specifically, like, I was living in Sandy Springs at the time, and I was living really close to the Chattahoochee, and I was, of course, this is active addiction. I remember walking my dog, and like it was like one of those moments of like, I was like, man, like things are really, really bad now. I don't have a lot of self-esteem. I don't feel like I'm seeing all my peers like get new jobs and get girlfriends and get married and, like, you know, have good relationships with their family and all these things. And I wasn't getting any of that. And so, you know, for me, like, it was one of those moments of, like, okay, things are really, really bad now. But that emotional bottom was me believing it's always going to be like that. Nothing's ever going to change. Your life is just going to get slowly, slowly, progressively worse. And I remember 100% believing that sentiment. I mean, I just totally bought into the fact that nothing was ever going to improve for me, and I was just going to live out my existence, you know, just drinking alcoholically, and my world was going to shrink and shrink and shrink and shrink. And I had kind of accepted that. And so, you know, for me, it took me a long time of that to kind of come into AA. I would say what started that process is the breakup of a 3-year relationship, which, you know, when you're an alcoholic like me, you will simultaneously put your entire self-worth in a relationship, but you will give absolutely nothing to that relationship at all, which is just totally out of bounds. The fact that I mean, it was just so selfish. I mean, it was what comes up on a sex inventory for me, which is selfishness, inconsiderate, dishonest, you know, all these character defects that come up for me. And so I went to a therapist, and she could probably tell two things. She could tell that I was very, very lonely, and that she could tell I drank a lot, which for me hurt because I call it the halfsies rule. You know, it's like somebody asks you how much you drink, and you apply the halfsies rule. So I was like, I like 6 drinks a night, and she was like, I remember her being like, whoa, you know, like, she like jumped, there was like a quick little jump back, you know, and I was like, oh man, it's really like 12 to 20, and that kind of thing, and like, I that instantly was like, oh man, things are pretty dire, and then the pandemic happened, And, you know, Tim kind of mentioned that that's when I came into AA. You know, I went further and further down, and then AA, that was coming into AA, you know, eventually lifted me up. But before I came in, I went from, you know, wanting to drink to I had to drink. The choice was no longer there. You know, that therapist, you know, she also said, I think, she suggested CrossFit and AA. And so, like, if CrossFit's your thing, like, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum. Like, we all have our things. Like, it's all good stuff. But, like, I'm not a CrossFit guy. You know what I mean? I'm just not a CrossFit guy. And so I kind of equated, like, CrossFit. And she could tell I needed a community. She could tell I needed to be surrounded by people. But I equated those things as very similar things. And I was like, I would never do CrossFit in AA. Like, it was like, there was an ampersand connecting those two. And I just totally wrote it off. But things got worse and worse, and a seed was planted. Like the millennial that I am, I went into Spotify and I just searched sobriety. And I found this podcast, which was, it's still a podcast that's going. It's called Keep Coming Back, Real Stories of Sobriety and Recovery. For me, that's when I got to listen to people's stories in AA. I wasn't confident enough to just walk into an AA meeting. I needed to kind of do a little bit of investigative research, and the classic thing happened, which is every single story I heard something that I related to. And sometimes it was like people were telling my story. They were talking about emotional bottoms. They were talking about hopelessness. They were talking about drinking. They were talking about not being able to show up in relationships. You know, their world's kind of getting smaller and smaller. And, you know, for me, something kind of inside me said, Adam, you know, you really got to check this out. Like, you kind of, you know, this is one of those kind of pivotal moments. Like, you can either keep going down the path you're going, or you can just walk into a meeting and check this out. And that's why I'm grateful for things like, you know, bluechipspeakers.org. For the you know, Joe and Charlie tapes, speaker tapes, that people make them available, because I think there's a lot of people out there like me that, you know, aren't just going to walk into an AA room. Like, I didn't have a treatment, no treatment at the center. I've never been to treatment. You know, I'm not somebody that's, I was somebody that just kind of got off the couch and just had enough. I went to an in-person meeting. I felt like it was COVID and there weren't wearing a lot of masks, and I said, I'm not about to do this. So I found the NavaZoom 545 meeting, and you know, that's kind of where I got my first impressions of people in AA. They weren't what I expected. They were very, very happy, and they were carefree. I mean, that's where I was able to kind of sit back and listen to people like Tim and Tinsley and Patty and Julie and Ira and all these people that I'm sure you guys know. I was able to listen to all these people. And they had what I wanted. They had not only were they carefree and happy, but I think what stuck out to me most is they had this like very like quiet, humble resilience. You know, they talked about things they were going through and how they were handling those things with grace and dignity and trust. Those were all qualities I had none of. And I think that's when I realized that. I need to stop drinking, but like, there's more here. There's more in AA beyond not just drinking. And for me, that was really impactful. I also had another first impression of somebody in AA. I'll tell a quick story. But I was new in sobriety. I had just started working with a sponsor for the first time, and I think I bought the first edition of the Big Book. Because I was like, first edition, that's the best edition. Like, I'm the best. I need to get the best edition. That's probably what we're gonna really start this process. And so I was working with a sponsor, and he had, of course, the fourth edition, and I had the first edition. We were on different pages. So I had to return that first edition, and I did my Amazon returns at this UPS store. I've been to this UPS store many a times, and I knew that the guy that worked there, he didn't like the Amazon returns to be packaged up. Like, he would always like, if you packaged up your Amazon returns, he would rip it open and like undo it. And so I was like, I was embarrassed that I was in AA, so I packaged up the Amazon return. I'm like, how am I going to get through this? You know, early in sobriety, everything is so emotional. Everything's like high stakes, the biggest deal ever. And so I'm waiting in line, and I get up to the counter of this guy, and I hand him my covered up, packaged first edition. He rips it open. He looks at the book, and he looks at me. He goes, "Are you a friend of Bill?" And I had heard that before. And so this guy, he proceeds to talk to me for like 5 minutes. And there's a line of people formed behind us. There's just people after people. And he was like, "How long you been in AA? We should hit a meeting sometime. How's it going?" And like 5 minutes in like Amazon package time. I mean, that's like in UPS time. Like that's a lot of time. You know what I mean? And like I'm sitting there sweating. Because this guy's like holding me up. He's like holding up the whole line. But like I left that UPS store just like hating that guy. I was like, he made an example of me. How could he do that to me? And I, you know, through sobriety, through working the program, I look back on that experience so fondly because, I mean, to me that's the hand of AA. You know, we stop everything we're doing and make sure the newcomer is okay. And that's the experience that I had. And you know, so I think now it was experiences like those I look back on, and I'm just grateful for people that do that because it underscored the importance of kind of the work we do for me. And so you know, what happened is I did the classic stuff, got a sponsor, started the steps. I was only going to Zoom meetings. Zoom meetings didn't keep me sober. For me, what was missing from Zoom meetings was fellowship. And so, you know, ultimately, I relapsed. And I was out for about 5 months. I had some other life change stuff that was causing me stress as well. Things I look back on now and I'd be more equipped to handle. And during that period of time where I had 5 months, and then I had 2 months and relapsed, you know, I had like two drunk driving incidents. And one of which was picking up my mom from the airport. So I mean, it just shows you how crazy we can become. Like, we go out and it's like boom, you know. And this is after like, I was picking up from the airport because her mom had just passed away, and I couldn't handle the emotions of that. I'm so ashamed of it now. But I mean honestly, it's one of those things I look back on and be like, man, like how could I do that to her? You know what I mean? Like how could I do that? And you know, to me, it's become an example of how crazy this disease can make us if we're not working a program. Because I had learned a lot, but I was right back in that moment before I knew it, and it was because I stopped working the steps and I didn't access the fellowship. Those are the two things that were missing from the first time I came in. And so, you know, I came back into AA and I started working the steps. I moved to East Atlanta, so I was living in Sandy Springs. And I moved to East Atlanta, and you know what was missing before? Fellowship. So I knew I needed to kind of access a local community. I got a home group down there. I started making friends, and you know the rest is history. And so you know for me, fellowship is one of those things that is critical to me. And you know without it, like I was not able to kind of stay sober because I can't do this by myself. You know, I need other people to do this with, and not only is that the appropriate way to do it, it's the only way to do it. It's more fun that way too, what I've learned. I've had more fun in sobriety than I ever had drinking, and you know, my worst days in sobriety are better than my best days drinking, which is something that I'm grateful this program has provided me. So I would say, you know, early on, what I connected with, coming into AA, there's a couple phrases that are really, really important to me. So the first is taking it one day at a time. That was very important to me. If I came into AA and felt like I was signing up for like a lifelong thing, I would not have been able to do this. I think I've heard people say that this is a simple program for complex people. And to me, what resonated with me is I was trying to fix my whole life every single day, and that was unnecessary. I relate to the sentiment of needing to do that, but for me, just that one day at a time, taking it slowly. Of like, if I just have my head hit the pillow tonight without taking a drink, that's enough. You know, that's the bar that this program, in my experience, sets for us. If we just do that, then we wake up another day. And when I had cravings really bad early on, I would just go to bed. I would just go to bed at like 7 p.m. if I needed to. You know, whatever it took. And I remember early on, I'd always wake up the next day being so grateful that I didn't drink. And so to me, you know, it's just punt to the next day. When things are really bad, just punt to the next day. Another thing that was important to me was prioritizing AA over everything. That sounded like a lot to do early on. It sounded like something that for me didn't make sense, because my job is more important than AA. Dating is more important than AA. My family is more important than AA. School is more important than AA. All these things are more important than AA. And then I kind of realized that, you know, really through talking with a sponsor and talking with other fellows, that AA is making all those things better. It's making all those different aspects of my life better. And honestly, you know, to me, that's what's giving me an enriched life versus what I had drinking. And so I think once I kind of started to reflect on that and realize that, you know, AA is making all these things better, it made it really, really easy to kind of make sure that I went to a meeting every day, and that my actions didn't always demonstrate that prioritization of AA being the most important, but I always maintained it on like a theoretical level. In a lot of days, if I just went to a meeting and just didn't drink, that was sufficient. I also really liked Play the Tape Out. I don't know if anybody's ever heard that one, but Play the Tape Out was a really important one for me. You know, I remember one time I was watching Law and Order SVU, and like there was just this like really fat red wine glass, and this woman was holding it, and she was, you know, the whole thing was romantic, you know, and it was not, I got that kind of initial like, oh man, that looks good, you know, but when I play that tape out, I can't just have a glass of wine. I'm going to drink the whole bottle of red wine. I'm going to drive to the liquor store drunk and get more alcohol, and then you're not going to see me for 3 months. You know what I mean? Like that's like playing the tape out like that is helpful, because and then my life is going to slowly erode. You know, all the stuff good in my life is going to slowly go away, and that's if I'm lucky. If I'm unlucky, I'll die. You know what I mean? And so for me, playing the tape out was a valuable thing that just kind of allowed me to pause and not just react in the moment, but just kind of take a deep breath and think about my actions before I actually do them. I think the last one that was important to me early on was, I think somebody said to me, why don't you let somebody else make the decisions? Which that somebody else is program and sponsor and kind of the summation of all the people in AA. But I kind of realized that the decisions I had made up until that point weren't really working for me, which I guess is kind of my first dose of humility. But for me, the program made it really, really simple. When you have a conflict, talk to your sponsor about it. Let the program work through the conduit of sponsorship, and that's going to give you a better answer 9 times out of 10. And for me, you know, working with good sponsors like Tim, you know, and help me see that over time by just bringing things to the table and then getting program inspired actions, whether it's things to do by myself or things to do with other people. And so, you know, those are kind of the sayings that for me were really, really important early on. I would say that now that I have, you know, a little bit of time, there's of course other things in AA that are super important to me. I would say the first and most important thing is the steps, right? I mean, the program is the steps. The steps are the most, through working with sponsors and talking with guys that have stayed sober a long time, the steps are the program. And you know, for me, step one was foundational, and I'll actually, hopefully I can read each one here. But step one is, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. For me, step one is foundational. So if I don't believe that I can take a sip of alcohol without impunity, you know, then I need to go back and do step one fully. And for me, it was really, really helpful to make lists. So I made like a powerlessness list over alcohol. This is like examples of me. This is examples of me, I guess, demonstrating my powerlessness over alcohol. I made a powerlessness over non-alcohol things, right? So like, I can't control my job. You know, I can't control people at my job. I can't control my family, but I can control how I behave around my family. I can control how I treat my coworkers. You know, to me, having a clear line of what I can and can't control, what I'm powerless over and what I'm not powerless over, was helpful for me because, you know, there was a lot of things that I was trying to control that was just wasted energy. And for me, it's that kind of trying to control things I can't control. That's exasperation that'll lead me to a drink at some point. So I'm a big believer that if you don't fully believe if you don't fully believe your powerlessness over alcohol, that's probably the step that you should be focusing on. And so I'm a big believer in making sure people say that's the only one you got to do 100% right. I'm a believer of that, for what it's worth. Two and three. So step two is, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. This one took a little bit of time. I think for me, I had that powerlessness list. And so, you know, I had a lot of examples of things I had done that I was none too proud of when I was drinking. And I think having that list, you know, I had a sponsor that kind of asked me, he was like, hey, like all this like effed up stuff that you did, you know, like it's been kind of a while since you did that. You know, I was like, you know what, you're right. It has been a while since I did any of that stuff. And he was like, it's almost like a power greater than yourself has restored you to sanity. And I was like, you know what? You're right. I think you're right. It has. And that power was AA. I mean, that power was AA working in my life. And so, you know, for me, that's all the bar. People will talk about religion. To me, that's where the bar is set. If you want to have any other interpretations of that, and if that's helpful, go for it. But to me, it's the minimum higher power for me is AA and the summation of people in AA. Me listening to their experiences, that's enough. And so I think a lot of times two happened over time for me. You don't just believe instantly, right? I needed reps of prayer and meetings and sponsorship and all these things that we do in AA for me to believe. And, you know, for three, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him, you know, I was turning it over blindly. I was telling my sponsor things. I was sharing in meetings. And I didn't know what I was going to get from it. I knew that I was going to just release this feeling from myself. But over and over, it was kind of like I was doing three. If I was doing three enough, two just kind of happened gradually in there for me. I just kind of started to believe that this was working for me. And, you know, I remember I had an aha moment with three, which is once I realized I don't have to decide as much anymore. I mean, it was like my shoulders went from here to here. You know, I mean, it was like the tension just left my body. Once I kind of had that moment of being like, I don't have to decide things anymore. Four and five. So four is made us searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five is admitted to God and ourselves the exact nature of our wrongs. I did my first fifth step in this basement. It took about 4 hours. I had a lot of stuff that I hadn't done it for the first time. And I remember driving home feeling relief. I think, you know, to me, the practice of inventory, one, it just gets it out of your body and onto paper. That's valuable. But doing a fifth step and sharing that with a sponsor that knows your patterns, knows your background, can give you program-inspired advice. There's nothing more valuable than that, and that's why, you know, for me, ten is critical as well. Six and seven, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character, and seven is humbly asking to remove our shortcomings. I've heard that people with long-term sobriety stay here. Hopefully I can tell you guys one day what that means. But for me, I think that constant process of evaluating your character defects and making sure that they're not the ones running the show allows you to have less resentments is what I would imagine. And that's been my experience so far. Eight and nine, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And then 9 is made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The names came from 4 and 5. I was able to reset important relationships in my life. I was able to reset my relationship with my mom, with my sister, with college buddies whose wedding invitations I ignored, with institutions that fired me. I was able to free myself of these things, and I didn't even know they were bothering me, really. Some I knew were bothering me, others I didn't. 10, continue to take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. So one new thing I'm doing with my current sponsor is he has me email my resentments to him, so we have like a resentments chain. So I'll do the 6 columns in email form, and then we talk about it, or if I write it down, we'll meet in person, it's valuable for me. I think I'm just now getting to this point where something bad happens in my world, and I will just go into a specific part of where I live, and I'll just put it into the columns. I'll just do it because I know that's the only way I'm going to get relief. These things are not just going to leave me. I'm not going to exercise them away. I'm not going to eat food them away. I'm not going to vacation them away. They're always going to be there until I actually do the work to get rid of them. And that work is simply put in the 6 columns that we're taught to do. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I could certainly be a better meditator. I don't really meditate very often. I'm a big believer in the third step prayer in the morning. Big believer in kneeling as well. I've knelt at least once a day for most of my sobriety, and I am somebody that could always use a dose of humility. Even in AA, it's very quick for me. It's very easy. It's my default is to say, Adam, you're the one who's making all this good stuff happen. The bad stuff is that could never be responsible. That just never happened. No. But all the good stuff that's happening, I'm very quick to take credit for that. And the reality is that it's AA that deserves the credit for those things happening in my life. And for me, prayer is the quickest way to establish that conscious contact with God. I don't have to dial a number of somebody. I can just take a pause, say a quick prayer, and then it's like boom. But that channel that's so critical for us has been unlocked. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. I heard people say that we need to give back what has been freely given to us. For me, I try to do things like this. I try to do service as well. I sponsor guys. I make sure that I'm not just like being sponsored. I'm actually bringing stuff to my sponsor to work on. I'm not just checking the box most of the time. If he was here, he'd probably say your recent 4th step could use a little work, but it happens. Like we just do the best we can. And so, I'm a big believer that we stay sober by carrying the message to other alcoholics. And to me, that provides not only a valuable experience, but a rewarding experience for me. I know I've got just about 5 or 6 minutes left, so I want to quickly hit a few other things that are important to me and then wrap it up. I've mentioned sponsorship. I can't do the steps by myself. I need objective guidance. And of all the relationships I have with people, a sponsor is the only one that I feel like I can be 100% honest with, right? I mean, there's things I wouldn't tell my mom, my partner, my boss, my closest friend. This program gives us that person, if we seek it, that we're able to be 100% honest with. And to me, I found that to be, that's a resource that people outside of AA don't get, and we're fortunate enough to have that. For me, being able to not only access that myself, but to give it to another person that asked me to be their sponsor is valuable as well. I've had the ability to kind of sponsor a few other men and just try to, you know, really just sponsorship to me is shining a light on the program when that sponsee seeks it out. That's all it is, and I try to keep it pretty simple. I mentioned daily prayer, kneeling, reminder of who's in charge. It also encourages me to be humble. Fellowship. Fun is critical, right? Like, I think I'm a big believer in having fun. And I've had a lot more fun in the four-ish years I've been sober than I did in 10 years of drinking. You know, it keeps me connected as well. So my home group is No Expectations on Memorial Drive. And our fellowship after that meeting is at Fellini's in Candler Park. I'm a regular attendee of Fellini's. I did grow up eating it, so it's like a nostalgic thing as well, to have Fellini's pizza. And I had a belly button birthday last month, and that was where I wanted to celebrate my birthday. You know what I mean? It was like Friday night. That's where I wanted to be. I wanted to be there with my people, and some of my fellows got my favorite. I was born on Pi Day, so they got a bunch of key lime pies. They know it's my favorite pie. So just the fact that I have people that know that is just a nice thing. That they did that for me, it means a lot. Calling other alcoholics and being honest with them about sharing. So it's very easy to essentially just kind of check the box and call people and say I call people. But what that's really for is for me to kind of, like with my sponsor, of practice honest sharing, practice listening. I'm not a good listener, right? I mean, I've spent a lot of time. I have a lot of experience tuning people out from being an addict and them saying things that I didn't want to hear. And so calling out the alcoholics, to me, it's a good way to kind of get outside myself and get connected to the program. And to me, I've heard that called, it's a practical mechanism for practicing 2 and 3. Gratitude is important for me. I heard in a meeting, this is one of my favorite things I've ever heard in a meeting. This guy said, a grateful heart's not going to drink. And to me, I was like, you know, it just hit me. Like, you know, there's always something to be grateful for, no matter how bad things are. One practical tool I've got from that is I don't do it every day, but I learned, I had a sponsor that did a gratitude list on a bathroom mirror with a dry erase board. So we just had gratitude list and then just said 1, 2, 3. And to me, just starting my day, being grateful for things, you know, no matter how bad things are, it just kind of reminds me that it's so easy for me as an alcoholic to focus on the negative. And for me, it just helps remind me that there's always things that are positive out there. The last is service. So I'm the treatment and accessibility chair for my home group. I've done that for the last 2 years. Since August, I take a meeting to Summit Midtown. It's a treatment center in Midtown, and I take a speaker meeting to that facility. Not only does that help me give back to people that aren't exposed to AA, but it also forces me to find a new person to be a speaker every single week, and that's good because it helps me meet new people in AA. I know I just got like a little bit of time left here, so I'll wrap it up. But you know, for me, you know, the alcohol has been gone for a while, but the ism is still there. And you know, by ism, I mean like my propensity to act in a way that's misaligned with what the program teaches us. That still happens, and those misbehaviors are more frequent when I'm not doing the simple stuff that this program offers to me freely and freely. So, you know, for me, like, I came in here being like, this is, I need help drinking. But, you know, the reality is that, like, for me, you know, AA is about becoming a better person. And I believe that if I'm able to stay here and continue to do what AA offers me to do, and for that I'm grateful. You know, I'm going to be able to take this design for a living, and it's going to give me a life that I'll look back on fondly, and that's all going to be because of AA. So for me, I'm grateful for this program. I'm going to close with one reading from the 12 and 12. That's one of my favorite things in the 12 and 12, which is on page 74. Something new indeed has been added. Where humility had formerly stood for a force feeding on humble pie, it now begins to mean the nourishing ingredient which can give us serenity. This improved perception of humility starts another revolutionary change in our outlook. Our eyes begin to open to the immense values which have come straight out of painful ego puncturing. Until now, our lives have been largely devoted to running from pain and problems. We fled from them as from a plague. We never wanted to deal with the fact of suffering. Escape via the bottle was always our solution. Character building through suffering might be all right for saints, but it certainly didn't appeal to us. Then, in AA, we looked and listened. Everywhere we saw failure and misery transformed by humility into priceless assets. We heard story after story of how humility had brought strength out of weakness. In every case, pain had been the price of admission into a new life. But this admission price had purchased more than we expected. Thank you.
Thank God for the Nava basement, and thank you, Adam, for joining the Hand of AA.
First I slip, and then I trip to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. Look into love's window for a soul that's meant for me. Takes me where the promise is, all is. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, God walks by, we walk eternally. Looking through love's window for a heart. Oh,